Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is the 20th day of January. I think that makes it a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. So we did it. We made it through the Monday. We're knee-deep in Tuesday, which is almost the middle of the week, which is essentially the weekend again, ladies and gentlemen. We're just about there. I'm just going to try and stay positive about that. Thank you guys again for tuning in today. Thank you all for checking out redpillreports.com. Love it when you guys go there. I also love it when you guys support Truth Frequency Radio and support our broadcast by being in the chat room. It's so nice to have some interaction every day with actual live listeners. So those of you guys that are hanging out in the chat room, very much appreciated. I hope you guys enjoyed yesterday's program with Dr. Harris. I really, really enjoyed his information, and we got a lot of good response from the listeners out there. So no idea just about how awful the FDA was until yesterday, and it does seem like they are just about as bad as you could possibly be when it comes to supplemental medicines and things like that. But anyway, glad you guys enjoyed that. Got a lot of good feedback about that. Chris Kitsey will be joining us in about an hour. Chris Kitsey, of course, the CEO of Unseen.is, and his big play on the world, I guess, is the importance of encrypted communication. And obviously, after the Charlie Hebdo attack in Paris, this whole battle that is going to be waged against encryption is gaining some major steam, both in America and in the EU. So, we'll probably be talking about that, trying to figure out exactly how quickly the walls are going to cave in on us this year in terms of our privacy online, things like that. So do stay tuned. As I mentioned, about an hour from now, Chris Kitsey will be joining us live for that. Ralph Winterroad will be joining us tomorrow at the 11 o'clock central hour, and we'll be talking about sovereignty and talking about how to operate in a court and what actually is going on in the courtrooms. I know there's a lot of people out there that are very interested in the two legal systems, one legal and one lawful, and Ralph will be coming to talk to us, give us some information about that. Should be really interesting. I'm very much a student of that topic myself, so I definitely want to get as much of that type of information out into the world as possible, especially just even simple things, jury nullification, stuff like that, that everybody needs to know, because we can win. We can take these people to task and take this country back. But anyway, Ralph Winterroad will be joining us tomorrow. I don't know why his name is so difficult to say. It's probably the R and the W combined. Anyway, Thursday, Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton be joining us. They also have a show on Truth Frequency on Saturday nights. Fantastically entertaining and fantastic investigative researchers, those two. But I believe what we're going to do on Thursday is pretty much espouse the evils of the Clinton oligarchy. And we really need to get out in front of this whole Hillary Clinton thing before she spends $1 billion on the television and convinces everyone to vote for her because she might potentially be a woman. Jury's still out on that, by the way. But anyway, I think that, again, we're going to have them on. They've done a lot of research into the Clinton oligarchy and especially Hillary herself. So lots to talk about with that today. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot going on in the world right now. Not only around the country, but around the planet too. There's just so much happening. I don't even know if we're going to get through all the news today. Probably won't. So, if you're out there listening and you're, on your computer, you can go to redpillreports.com and go to the show section, which is right at the top of the page there. You'll also be able to learn about Chris Kitsey, our guest today, and see all of the articles that I most likely won't be able to get to. But there, as I said, is a whole lot of stuff going on, not just nationally and internationally, but in economic news and in health news, even way down in the home, farm, and garden stuff, energy, environment. We got a lot of stuff to try and cover today, so I probably ought to just shut my trap when it comes to this ramble that I'm on right now and actually do my job and tell you people, you know, what's going on in the world. So let's jump over into the international news, because, as I said, there's not a shortage. We talked yesterday about the increase in activity, including shelling and, well, essentially warfare going on, increased warfare going on this weekend over in Donetsk, which is, of course, you know, supposedly an independent nation now, or an independent republic that is trying to fracture itself away from the Ukraine. And supposedly they are getting a lot of support from Russia. But over the weekend, the fighting escalated quite a bit there around the city of Donetsk, and a lot of casualties actually coming out. But it did not subside yesterday. Yesterday, sporadic shelling hit a hospital in Donetsk and actually shook other parts of the region all throughout the day on Monday. While Ukraine alleged that hundreds of Ukrainian troops crossed the border to help rebels fighting for the country, you know, the control of the eastern side of the country there. But the Ukraine's fresh charges of Russia backing the rebels comes after each side blamed the other for a complete breakdown of the September truce just over the last few days, with very heavy combat rocking the area around the Donetsk airport continuing into yesterday. Despite the sporadic explosions all day yesterday, the overall violence was a lot lower than it has been over the weekend. But heavy clashes rocked the area around the airport northwest of the city after Ukraine launched a major counteroffensive to push back the rebels. The hospital hit on Monday, yesterday, is located in the center of the city, and the rebel officials who control that area reported 6 wounded, including 1 doctor and 5 patients, and the building's front was damaged and the windows were blown out. A university across from the hospital was also hit. So again, you kind of have to start wondering about the target acquisition and the target selection that Ukraine and Kiev and essentially you and I as taxpayers are paying for right now, because look at what they're targeting in the eastern Ukraine. They're targeting schools, they're targeting universities, they're targeting hospitals. And, you know, maybe these are all oopsies, we missed our target, but you would think at this point, with the amount of military support that Ukraine has got from NATO and from the United States, that they would be better at aiming these things. But the Ukrainian military reported at least 3 soldiers killed over the last 24 hours and another 66 wounded, but they do claim to be now in control of the airport there in Donetsk. Rebels have since disputed Kiev's account and said that they're, and because there's no independent confirmation right now, I can't really tell you what's actually going on at the airport there in Donetsk. Journalists are not able to get to the site. But the blackened and wrecked airport has been hit by repeated on and off clashes, and control has often been divided between new and an old terminal and other installations. So the battle for the Donetsk airport is still really, really, really going on, and probably ought to be pointed out also that the conflict has killed almost 5,000 people since April of last year, and more than 1 million people, again, have been displaced from the area, and a lot of those women and children. So difficult to say what's actually going on there, but a very well-respected Russian human rights activist, her name is Alana Vasilyeva, she has announced that 382 Russian soldiers have been killed in Ukraine just over the last 3 days. She writes on her blog that she just came back from the war zone. She says it's impossible to call it an ATO zone. It is really a merciless war going on there right now. She says she's already afraid to write these numbers because the Russian army has had huge losses over the past 3 days. 382 people, selected special forces, Marines, paratroopers, and up to 500 additional soldiers injured. And more likely, the number of wounded is much higher, but they have no access to the full information about the injured from the Russian side. The activist, as I said, her name is Elena, goes on to say that counting the most recent 382 deaths, the total loss on the Russian side is grown to more than 6,000. She says, say it's impossible to verify these claims right now because the Russian government insists that no Russian soldiers are actually fighting in Ukraine, only volunteers. And the Ukrainian government also does not have reliable figures on the number of enemy casualties. It's important to understand, too, that this was a soft border between the Ukraine and Russia. And a lot of the people that live in Ukraine have got family in Russia. They've got, you know, they're either ex-military or they have fathers and brothers and uncles and things like that that fought for Russia. So the idea that these people would abandon their safety of, you know, the safety of their homes in Russia to go over and support family members in Ukraine, whether supported, you know, on the surface by Russia or just being people that want to go and help people, I think both of those possibilities definitely exist. But I can't really cast judgment against anybody from Russia who would go over there to try and help friends and family members, given especially, you know, 4,800 dead people in Donetsk there, and over a million people displaced, most of them going over into Russia, you know. Anyway, Elena has become the source of information for hundreds of Russian women whose sons and husbands secretly went or were sent to war in eastern Ukraine. Elena is the only one who tells them what military units of the Russian Federation took part in which fights and what to do if a soldier has not been communicated with in some weeks. So one person there, as I said, a Russian activist, getting some information out about at least the Russian side of what's going on in the eastern Ukraine there. And 13 people were wounded in a blast outside of a courthouse in Kharkov in Ukraine, according to police. Again, 13 people injured, 6 of them in critical condition after an explosion took place outside of a courthouse in the northeastern Ukrainian city of Kharkov, according to police. According to the data finalized by the medic, 13 people injured, 6 of them critical, as I said. Let's see. According to the preliminary information, an explosion went off at the end of a hearing regarding a case of a member of the Nationalist Svoboda Party. The member had been accused of bringing a weapon to a polling station during the parliamentary elections back in October 26th of 2013. Excuse me. And several party members supported the defendant during the hearing, with that blast occurring right after they left the court building. The explosion in front of the court has been qualified as a terrorist act, according to the Ukrainian Interior Ministry. And they added to that that an investigative team compromised of representatives of the police and the Prosecutor General's Office and Security Service of Ukraine had been working on the site. And according to preliminary data, the blast was caused by an exploding grenade. So, yeah, again, death toll in Ukraine right now exceeded 4,800 people over the last, well, just since April. Let's see, Saudi Arabia. Now, I would have put this down in the energy environmental stuff, but I never get down that far when I'm reading the news, so I stuck it up here in the national news, because Saudi Arabia says now, according to a former advisor, that their country can withstand 8 years, if not more, of low oil prices, as tensions in the slump of oil prices are obviously simmering right now between them and Iran. But as I said, a former advisor to Saudi Arabia told the BBC that Saudi Arabia was concerned about the falling oil price, but its cash reserves and planned budget cuts mean that it can cope with a long period of depressed prices. And I don't have the report up right in front of me, but I do know that Iran came out yesterday and said that they would be happy with $25 oil. That would be totally fine with them. So again, you know, we can see here very clearly Saudi Arabia, OPEC, all teaming up to crash the shale oil industry here in the United States. And again, that's exactly what it says. They come on and, I mean, this guy saying to shorten the cycle, we needed to allow prices to go as low as possible to see these marginal producers move out of the market on one hand. Who are the marginal producers that he's talking about? He's talking about the American shale industry. We thought for a long time it was Russia and Venezuela, but I believe now that those are just ancillary concerns, because if they can knock the shale industry of America off, you know, off its pedestal there, obviously then demand would start to grow and the price of oil would be able to rise. But if they can control it below, you know, about $40 a barrel, they can continue to produce. A lot of people may not know Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Iran, they don't have to pump their oil. I mean, that's essentially the long and the short of it. They have artesian oil wells. That's why it's so inexpensive to get oil out of the ground there. It's actually more expensive for them to try and stop the oil from coming out of the ground. So that's why, you know, when they say that they're not going to cut supply, it's because it actually costs them money to cut supply, and it's easier for them to just barrel it and put it in a warehouse someplace, because oil does not expire. So anyway, you can see that this oil price is still going to continue to fall. OPEC's totally fine with that. Iran came out, said they were totally fine with that as well. So what does that mean for the shale industry? Well, rocky roads are ahead. I do believe we've seen more fallout. Anyway, get back into the national news or international stuff here. I'll get away from the economy. We'll get back into that in a second. British intelligence apparently intercepted emails from the New York Times, Reuters, and the BBC, but it was by accident, apparently. So newly released Snowden documents show GCHQ was listening to the international communications of some of the most prestigious journalistic institutions in the world. That is a stretch, and I'm only saying that because it was written into the article. Anyway, a report in The Guardian details a test exercise that resulted in emails from BBC, Reuters, The Guardian, New York Times, Le Monde, The Sun, NBC, Washington Post, all being deposited into GCHQ's internal intranet. Not the internet, but the intranet, which is the internal internet for the GCHQ. Available to anyone logged into the system. It does not appear to have been an intelligence gathering exercise, and the resulting emails don't seem to have targeted any sensitive stories, but it still represents a pretty major privacy violation and a reminder of how easily bulk communication systems can be abused. The test apparently was meant to demonstrate a new filtering tool meant to strip out irrelevant data from final results. Over the course of about 10 minutes, researchers pulled 70,000 emails directly from GCHQ's cable tapping sites and then ran the experimental filters to see which of those messages could be surfaced as potentially valuable intelligence, and journalistic communications shot to the top of the list. Although there is no evidence to suggest the journalists were intentionally targeted, the news comes at a particularly sensitive time, however, as Prime Minister David Cameron pushes for comprehensive new surveillance laws, which seek to ban encrypted chat or email clients in the UK. Obviously, will most likely be a pillar or a foundation of our discussion with Chris Kitsey coming up in about 45 minutes. Obviously, encrypted communication and encrypted chat, email clients, things like that, very, very important right now, especially as we see in articles like this. You know, they don't care. They're already soaking up all our data. So, you know, people fighting to encrypt their data obviously must have something to hide, right? Okay, whatever. France just banned pro-Palestinian rallies. France is officially the first country in the world to ban pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli demonstrations. This move made by France's socialist government is actually a pretty big threat to democracy and freedom of speech. It's also patently ridiculous, in my opinion. But the socialist interior minister said that mass demonstrations planned for this weekend should be halted. Listen to this. Stated that there was a threat to the public order, while opponents said he was criminalizing popular support of the Palestinian people, which is exactly what he's doing. He also went on and welcomed a legal procedure instigated by the Paris police prefecture to ban the march, despite the fact that it's already been widely advertised. He goes on to say that anyone who turns up at an illegal demonstration now faces up to a year in prison and a 15,000 euro fine. And if they hide their faces to avoid being identified, that sentence can be increased to 3 years and a 45,000 euro fine. That is absolutely out of control, outrageous. Especially in a country that has just now had a huge rally in support of freedom of speech, now they want to ban you from freedom of speech and impose ridiculous, I mean, those are draconian. That's like, I could see a 1,500 euro fine or something like that. I mean, not that I would support it, but 15,000 euros, and if you have a mask on, like a Guy Fawkes mask, you're looking at 3 years in prison and $45,000 fines. Unbelievable. And listen to this. Even those who publish details of an illegal rally on social media face a year in prison and a $15,000 fine. So if somebody posts information on Facebook about a rally and you share it, you're going to jail in France. This can be increased to 7 years and a 100,000 euro fine if the posting leads to violence, according to this social interior minister guy. Absolutely crazy. Crazy. I don't even know what to say about that. It's absolutely crazy. So if you're in France, move. That's what I'd say to you people right now, because that is crazy. And United Nations Special Reporter on Violence Against Women, Rashida Manjoo, has been forced to cancel a trip to occupied Palestinian territories after Israeli officials refused her visa. She is somebody who goes around the world and talks and brings, you know, information awareness to situations where women are being exploited or women who have gone through, you know, and survived violence and things like that. But she says it's unfortunate that she has been denied the opportunity to engage directly with the women survivors of violence, and that the exercise of my mandate has been hindered by the unwillingness of Israel as the occupying power to facilitate access to the occupied Palestinian territory. And I would be surprised if anybody could get into Palestine right now in any kind of journalistic mentality. If you have not seen Anna Balzer's presentation, what is it called? It's about the occupation in Palestine. I think it's called A Witness in Palestine. Absolutely the most amazing thing you'll ever see with your own eyeballs. I'm not even kidding. If you have any ideas, preconceived notions about the occupation of Palestine right now and what that actually looks like on the ground, you can put them aside. You need to watch Anna Balzer's presentation She's written a great book, again, A Witness in Palestine. She's got, you can see a low quality version of her presentation on YouTube. Again, I highly, highly recommend it. It's also important to understand, that Israel of the Bible is not the Israel that we know on the planet today. There's a difference between Judaism and Zionism, and I do not blame the people of Israel for what happened to Palestine any more than I blame the people of Palestine for what happened in Israel, because obviously both of these groups of people are being led down the wrong path by the wrong people, just like our country, just like pretty much any country around the world, except for, it's kind of weird to have to say this, but except for maybe Russia. I got to say that. Russia president just approved an idea to offer very large land plots for free to anyone who wants to resettle in the Russian Far East to start a farm or other business. This initiative was first voiced by the deputy prime minister and presidential envoy to the Far East Federal District, and he said that the step could strengthen the tendency of people's migration to the Far East. So that's what they're trying to do there. He also told reporters that Putin called the idea right in principle and noted that similar programs had been successfully implemented in Siberia historically, and Putin urged all responsible officials to be precise and cautious when dealing with conditions for land ownership, right? His initial suggestion was to create a mechanism for the free allocation of about 2.5 acres plot of land for every resident of the Far East and to anyone who is willing to come and live in the region so they could start a private business in farming, forestry, game hunting, or some other enterprise. This is absolutely unbelievable. He also added that the agreement could be signed for 5 years and that it should either be full force, like if you do what you're supposed to do as the new landlord, if you follow the plan that they, you know, you come in, you start farming or a forestry campaign or start a business or whatever, in 5 years, you get to keep the property. That's it. If you don't do it within 5 years or the land isn't used, then that contract becomes void. He also added that corruption in the process of distribution could be prevented if the land plots are far enough from big cities where there are well-developed infrastructure and competitive environment. But the Far East Federal District is a huge territory. It unites 9 federal regions with a total area of about 6 million square kilometers. Included in the Far East are gold-rich regions in the Magadan region there and the diamond mining region in Russia that I can't pronounce, and as well as important seaports and salmon-rich rivers. The district also borders China by land and Japan and Alaska by sea. But I think that is just absolutely substantial. Now, they are saying that this is not open to foreigners. So you and I can't just go get on a plane, hop to Russia and, and get a plot of land. But I'll tell you what. Russia right now is insulating itself from the world, and they're doing it by returning to independent agrarian society. They are allowing people to be armed. They're basically going back to a republic. And I'm not saying that everything is perfect in Russia. Obviously, it's not. But I do believe that they have things more well in hand than I think the Western media would like us to believe. That's what I believe. I mean, think about their offer to Greece to import food from them. You know, they want to work with their neighbors. They don't want to be sanctioned. They want to have clean food for their people. They're not going to have GMOs, and they want to support Greece in producing non-GMO food and then, you know, and import that, dropping the sanctions. They allow their people to have weapons without concealed weapons. They freaking teach their kids in school how to assemble weapons and how to be safe with guns. I mean, that's a very important lesson, and these people do it there. It's like all the great things that you want to say about the United States, you can almost say about Russia now. And the fact that they're giving away land to make people more secure is going to make their country more secure. It's going to make them more self-sufficient. It's going to increase the value of their land. I mean, that's just, it's a genius economic move, and it's a genius move. I totally agree with Putin on this, that from a principle standpoint, it's the right thing to do. I don't know why we haven't done it here. Oh, right, because there's a corporation that runs absolutely everything here. Oh, my goodness. Anyways, that's pretty much it for the international stuff going on. There was a coup that was attempted in Yemen. Yemen has had a lot of problems over the weekend. Their prime minister survived an assassination attempt, and they are absolutely under siege in Yemen right now. So a lot of people in the region paying very close attention to what is going on there. They have tried to instill a new constitution that allowed some people who kind of came recently to the country to have more power, but they didn't seem to get enough. So again, constitution's kind of up in the air. Bad things going on in Yemen right now. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. I want to talk a little bit about some of the headlines that we're going to get to in the second part of the news here. There has been some pretty amazing news coming out from around America. Let's see here. There's a huge development going on in Seattle right now. I know a lot of people know I've got a huge love, a huge place in my heart for the Pacific Northwest, and I really pay attention to what's going on in Seattle. But remember last year when that huge drill got stuck, the Big Bertha drill, they were trying to fix the I-99 via aqueduct there, the viaduct or whatever you want to call it. It's an old, old road, and they were trying to dig underneath Seattle to build a new tunnel. Well, that drill got stuck. And there's a new company now that has unveiled a new plan to remove that drill from the ground. And I'm telling you, this is probably one of the most amazing engineering feats that will ever be attempted on the Earth. And I'm not even joking when I say that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well when we get back here. We've got some economic indicators that maybe the middle class isn't doing quite as well under Barack Obama as most people think, or as at least the talking heads on the TV would have you believe. So we'll talk about that. We got 27 indicators that maybe the middle class is faring a little bit worse. Also have some indications that Monsanto may be in a little bit of trouble. We'll just say it like this. Chuck Norris has come out against Monsanto, wrote a scathing piece about Monsanto on WorldNet Daily. And I'll tell you what, Chuck Norris is not somebody that you want to be against you, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll just put that in perspective here for you guys. Chuck Norris, born May 6th, 1945. Hitler surrenders May 7th, 1945. Do you think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. So the fact that Chuck Norris is now stepping up against Monsanto, I think we might see some changes here, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll talk about that when we get into the health news. Gotta go to a speaker, right? This is, of course, the Daily Dose of Programming. My name is JD. We are live. Be right back in about 3 minutes, guys. Keep it right here. Glad to have you guys along.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark. As ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky, and you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to My Patriot Supply. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp
HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Exposing faux capitalism with Jason Earp.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys for hanging out in the chat room. Always fun during the break to catch up on everything that's going on in there. Man, so much going on in the world right now. This is just absolutely crazy day in terms of news. I wonder if it has anything to do with the dates this week. A lot of prime numbers showing up in the dates this week. Just pointing that out. Americans, apparently, not super concerned about terrorism. Terrorism, obviously is in the news a lot these days, and the fear quotient, they're trying to keep it pegged. They're trying to keep your fear meter pegged all the time. But a new poll that just was released yesterday from Monmouth University, asked people to describe their biggest concerns facing their family. 16% of the poll respondents said either job security or unemployment, and the second most cited concern was healthcare costs, followed third by everyday bills. Only 1% of the respondents cited immigration or terrorism as their primary concerns. Enter false flag in 5, 4, 3, 2. Okay. Giant crane is going to lift 4 million pounds of the tunnel drilling, drill Bertha. It's going to happen. I tell you what, this story is absolutely amazing. You can see it at the Seattle Times, which we have linked, from redpillreports.com. But of course, that big drill, Bertha, was one of only two, I believe, in the world as large as it was, and got stuck trying to drill a big tunnel in Seattle last year. Hit something. They still haven't figured out exactly what it hit. But it did hit something and it bound up, and that was a big time deal. There, the Transportation Administration in Seattle having a lot of mud on their face in this one. So now the MMOA company, which is basically means mammoth in French, they have been gathering and erecting steel parts since September from all around the world, places like Malaysia and Europe and Canada. They're trying to lift this 4 million pound drill out of its cavernous hole, we're talking about a monumental engineering feat, because again, this thing is drilling a hole that's the exact same size of it. You're trying to basically lift a submarine lengthwise out of a hole in the ground so that they can do some front end repair on this drill. But it also, okay, let's just put it into perspective. The entire front end is similar to the weight of a space shuttle before it's taken off, but it actually behaves more like a submarine. So the fact that it's a cylindrical shape, the drill also sits in watery soil that exerts 4 times the atmospheric pressure. So it's also as if they're pulling this thing up from about 100 feet under the water. Just absolutely unbelievable. It'd be really, really interesting to be in Seattle and see this thing go down. The article is very long. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but there are some pretty impressive pictures that are going along with this. And this is obviously not your typical crane. I mean, these guys have brought in a monumental erector set, and they have literally had to create a crane that could exist in this really small small place between the waterfront and the old Alaskan Way Viaduct. And, I mean, just the engineering that's going into this is just absolutely staggering. So, I wanted to make that, point that out to you guys, because it's just something cool to follow. A UPS driver in a lot of trouble over there in Anderson, California. He has been arrested, on suspicion of grand theft after several packages containing silver and gold coins and gold bars worth more than $200,000 went missing during the shipping process. The Shasta County Sheriff's Department says Kevin Peel was arrested Friday last week in the city of Anderson And the department says Peel became a person of interest early in the investigation, which began in October when several packages containing precious metals went missing. So authorities said the sheriff's directives served a search warrant at Peel's home later and found cases of gold bars and silver coins matching the quantities reported stolen. So there's a little bit of a moral lesson. If you're going to be dumb enough to take, if you're the shipping person and you're stealing gold, don't hide it in your house. I mean, come on, have a little bit of sense. I don't know. You do it, what, 200,000? Really? You had to steal 200,000? You couldn't have just taken a couple of bars and called it good and then, you know, never talked about it again? Anyway, an FBI special agent who lost his job back in 2008 has now told Newsweek columnist Jeff Stein his story about how the 9/11 hijackers slipped through the cracks at the FBI and the CIA more than a decade ago. Mark Rossini said the CIA actually prevented him from going to FBI headquarters with the information that two known terrorists who would later want to carry out the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center had entered into the U.S. So, nurtured event? Absolutely. What do we know about spy agencies? They don't do anything. Their whole job is to keep track of people. That's it. That's all they do. They would much rather allow a terrorist into the country so that they could cultivate information. They can find out who he's talking to. They can see what bank accounts he's moving money into. It is not about stopping crime. It is about gathering intelligence. But what happened here in the situation was that Rossini, who was the FBI agent, knew these guys, two of the guys, were in town and that they were working with the CIA. And the CIA threw them off the trail. CIA then did effectively lose track of these two guys. And, you know, they were successful allegedly in carrying out the largest terrorist attack ever, the most successful attack on American soil ever in the history of our planet. We could talk about that for about another 8 hours about why that probably didn't happen. But still very interesting to note that the official administration's response to 9/11 cites lack of intelligence. Lack of intelligence cohesiveness. That's essentially what they say. They say that we had cracks in our intelligence formula, and that's not what happened. The FBI was all over this. The FBI knew that this guy had come in. He'd been the subject of the CIA for about a year. He'd left from America to go to Yemen for the birth of his baby, and then he flew back. I mean, the FBI guy was all over this. So was the CIA. And then the CIA loses track of him. Which then would put the, onus back on the FBI to actually prevent a crime, which they were unable to do, if you believe the official 9/11 story. So anyway, FBI knew about it, CIA stopped it. Was it a nurtured event? Yes. Has the CIA ever stopped an actual terrorist event that they didn't have a plan or a play in? No, of course not. So there you go. A body floating in a pond on a golf course in California has been identified as the AIG executive who disappeared a few weeks ago while attending a work conference in the area. According to the Riverside County Coroner's Office, they have confirmed that it is the body of Omar Metza, who was last seen about 11 p.m. local time on the 8th of January at the JW Marriott Desert Springs Resort in Palm Desert after having drinks with coworkers. The wife of the AIG Financial Distributors Vice President, Diane Meza, said he was dropped off by an Uber driver at the wrong hotel. Surveillance footage on the property shows Omar Metza walking out of the hotel lobby, and authorities later found Omar's jacket neatly folded on the golf course's, neatly folded on the resort's golf course over the weekend, along with his wallet. His body was discovered on Thursday afternoon when golfers finished the round, spotted it floating in a pond. Authorities had scoured the property for days, including looking in ponds with dive teams and search dogs, and they did not find anything. Okay, roof. If this wasn't in California, I would immediately say smiley face killer. The fact that his belongings were folded there, the fact that they have searched the area with divers and dogs and didn't find anything, obviously looks pretty suspicious to me. But because it's in California and the smiley face killer seems to be more Midwest, if not northern Midwest, my jury's still out on this, and I kind of start thinking more along the lines of, well, he's obviously the AIG, vice president of AIG. That's a pretty substantial position right now, given the context of the many, many alleged banker suicides that have gone along. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. You guys kind of need to look at that and tell me what you think, because I'm definitely feeling pretty foul play-ish about that, we shall say. And again, also about this particular case, I can't get into this whole story right now, but an Apple Valley couple and their child have been found dead in their house as a result of an apparent murder-suicide. So the body's been there for about a month. Apparently, they were found Saturday afternoon as neighbors next door came across the street and said they hadn't seen the family since before Christmas. We're talking about David Crowley, his wife, Komal Crowley, and their five-year-old daughter, Ronnie. The dog was still alive but wild and aggressive when police came. Now, why am I bringing this story up? Well, because David Crowley worked out of his home as a filmmaker and a screenwriter. And in a trailer on YouTube, he's credited as a writer and director of a movie in progress right now called Gray Slate. The subject of Gray Slate, which is very, very, tumultuous, we'll say. It's a frantic, we'll say it's frenetic trailer showing scenes of a militarized police force, gun violence, and some kind of citizen insurgency. So he's essentially was creating an anti-government movie on YouTube, and it was going to be released. But now he's been found in an alleged murder-suicide with his whole family in his home. Exceptionally suspicious, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion. But there's a lot more to that story than I believe that we will see. Here's a question. Have police accountability measures started to work? Are we seeing signs that things are working? I think we are. There was an intense standoff captured on video between a mentally unstable man and Sacramento police officers last week on Thursday. And amazingly enough, amidst a myriad of snipers and SWAT team members, nobody fired a single round at the man who was waving a revolver around in the middle of the road. So instead of shooting first and asking questions later, a negotiator, Officer Ed Bertola, was called in. Police requested over their loudspeaker for the suspect, Corey Thomas, to call 911. And to everyone's surprise, he did. So Bertola told Fox 40 that Thomas was originally over at the Power Inn, was originally pulled over at Power Inn for a registration violation. However, instead of stopping, he led authorities on a 30-minute high-speed chase throughout South Sacramento. But after speaking with Thomas, Bertola found that Thomas had experienced a set of unfortunate circumstances that led him to running from law enforcement. So police applied a certain level of empathy for the troubled man, and instead of firing rounds, they fired back phone calls to Thomas. Listen to this. Two negotiators from the Sacramento Sheriff's Department refused to give up, and they called Thomas a total of 48 times between 9:50 and 11:30 p.m. He said, this is Bertoli talking, he says, we have someone who's extremely upset, and they don't know who I am, so I shouldn't be too offended if he wants to hang up on me a few times. He also says that he had to choose his words very wisely in order to prevent any sudden flare-ups in Thomas's temper, which could have ended in a shootout or a suicide. Bertola listened to Thomas vent and eventually earned Thomas's trust. Bertola showed us that peace is an effective means in reconciling dangerous situations. And in 1 hour and 40 minutes after the standoff began, Thomas laid down the gun and was taken into custody. I almost cried when I read that. I tell you, people, I don't like people getting gunned down in the streets, especially for something. I mean, they're pulling him over, as they mention up front. They pulled him over because he had a registration issue. So again, forced taxation that could have resulted in somebody dying. And it didn't, because the police used their heads and they provided empathy for the guy. And man, that's just such great news. I love seeing stuff like that. Here's one that I don't like seeing, though, and this is ridiculous and it's true. And normally I'd put it down at the end of the bottom of the news down there in the good, funny, weird news section. But I had to bring it up because it's just so stupid, and it did happen in the States. So this happened in Cobb County, Georgia, where an Alabama man said that he was cited by Cobb County police for, quote unquote, eating while driving under the distracted driving law. Madison Turner said he had ordered a double quarter pounder with cheese from McDonald's last week, and a police officer pulled him over along Canton Road in Marietta. Said the officer explained to me that he observed me eating a hamburger for 2 miles. And he specifically said three times. You just can't go down the road eating a hamburger. So according to the ticket, the officer wrote him up under Georgia's distracted driving law. And under the comment section, he wrote eating while driving. And the law actually reads in part, a driver shall exercise due care in operating a motor vehicle from the highways of the state and shall not engage in any actions which shall distract such driver from the safe operation of such vehicle. The guy, Madison Turner, goes on to say, he said, maybe I was enjoying the burger too much and maybe I needed to tone it down a little bit. But, you know, I was certainly willing to do that. I didn't expect to be fined or punished, you know, for it. And there's a lawyer who commented he's not actually representing Turner, but the lawyer says he's only seen something like this actually happen in terms of a charge when there's been an accident. He says there's no accident here. So the fact that the man was charged with eating while driving is kind of a first in the states. The law is actually kind of vague. And he goes on to say maybe if you'd had a big giant pizza in both hands and you weren't holding the wheel, or maybe if you had a watermelon or a half a watermelon and you were just driving it, holding onto it with both hands, maybe that would be something. But this is obviously ridiculous. And a spokesman for Cobb County Police said that they would not comment since the case is ongoing. Madison does have a court date on the 3rd of February, excuse me, for eating a cheeseburger. Unbelievable. So I don't know if you're over in Alabama or if you're in Georgia, don't get caught eating a cheeseburger while driving down the road, because you can apparently get a ticket for it. So there you go. Let's look at the economy here real quick. Futures were down yesterday about 50 points and following suit in the market today. The market is down 111 in early trading. We're sitting at about 1,700.399, so well below the 18,000 mark that we had seen a few days ago. Crude oil dropping again this morning. Again, Iran saying they're totally fine with $25 barrel oil. Saudi Arabia saying we can survive at least 8 years without having to raise the price of oil. So again, only thing that's really going to make the price of oil go back up at this point is demand. And I don't really see that happening until we get more into the summer season. But anyway, oil falling again about $2 today, still settling in at about $46.73. Gold, wow, big time. Still big moves in gold. And I don't know how many of you are out there kicking yourselves in the butt for not buying gold last week. But it's up $100, guys. Just the last week, we're at $12.91, up $14.17 today, and most likely is going to keep going that direction. And now, are we seeing the purchasing power of the dollar dropping, or are we seeing gold rising? It's kind of difficult to say because gold is rising both against the euro and the dollar. The euro probably expected to drop in value a little bit later here as the ECB still planning on unleashing some quantitative easing. So anyway, some other facts about the economy that aren't sitting well with me this morning. According to Oxfam, which is a anti-poverty charity group, they have got a new report out this morning, and they estimate now that the wealth of the world's richest 1% will exceed that of the other 99% of the global population this year unless steps are taken to address the inequality. So what are they saying? They're saying that right now, 1% of the global wealthy elite own more than half of the world's wealth. That is just absolutely unbelievable. So this report's called Wealth, Having It All and Wanting More, reveals that the richest 1%, who on average, they on average had about $2.7 million per adult in 2014, they have seen the share of global wealth soar further, increasing from 44% from the period 2009 to 48% in 2014. So again, the global wealthy getting more and more wealthy. How is the middle class doing? Let's just ask some questions. Or here's some tidbits, I guess would be a better way to say that. Here's 27 tidbits to kind of clearly show exactly how the middle class is faring since Barack Obama took office. Right now, number one, American families in the middle 20% of income now earn less money than they did the day Barack Obama entered the White House. Number two, American families in the middle 20% of income have a lower net worth than they did. According to a Washington Post article published just a few days ago, more than 50% of the children in the United States public schools come from low-income homes. This is the first time this has happened in at least 50 years. According to a Census Bureau report that was recently released, 65% of all the children in the United States are living in a home that receives some sort of government aid. In 2008, the total number of business closures exceeded the total number of businesses being created for the first time ever, and that has continued to happen every single year since then. In 2008, 53% of all Americans considered themselves to be middle class, but by 2014, only 44% of Americans still considered themselves to be middle class. In 2008, 25% of all Americans in the 18 to 29-year-old age bracket considered themselves to be lower class. But in 2014, an astounding 49% of all Americans in that age range consider themselves to be lower class. Traditionally, owning a home has been one of the key indicators that you belong in the middle class. So what does the fact that the rate of home ownership in America has been falling for 7 years in a row say about the Obama years? Pretty telling, if you ask me. According to the survey that was conducted last year, 52% of all Americans cannot even afford the house they are living in right now. Also, according to a recent survey, 62% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. And at this point, one out of every three adults in the United States has an unpaid debt that is, quote unquote, in collections. It's hard to believe, but an astounding 53% of all American workers make less than $30,000 a year. Wow. At the end of Barack Obama's first year in office, our yearly trade deficit with China was $226 billion. Last year, it was more than $314 billion. When Barack was first elected, the U.S. debt to GDP ratio was under 70%. Excuse me. Today, it is over 101%. Man, there's so many indications right now that the middle class is just being absolutely squeezed out. There's a lot more there, but I want to jump on to some other things real quick. Gold still flowing into Germany, according to the Central Bank of Germany. They are still repatriating gold. In 2014, they repatriated 120 tons of gold from storage locations abroad, 35 tons from Paris and 85 tons from New York. So, again, we're seeing central banks around the world clamoring to repatriate their gold, which makes a lot of sense if you understand the tradition that a lot of, or the transition that a lot of us think might be coming down here. Russia did something else that I thought was pretty interesting. They are not going to be using credit ratings from Standard & Poor's, Fitch, or Moody's anymore. They basically just voided them yesterday. So all credit ratings given to Russian companies and banks will now be at the discretion of the board of directors of the banks, according to a press statement on Monday. The regulators will assess whether or not the ratings made after March are accurate. Also wanted to point out again that Russia and China are right now in the process of establishing their own rating system, which will be the Universal Credit Rating System Group, the UCRG. That group plans on issuing its first ratings this year, 2015. So the lower ratings right now will likely result in less foreign investment, which is why Russia is so worried about it, because less foreign investment is obviously a bad thing for them right now, because capital flight bad. They lost more than $150 billion in capital last year, and more than a record $133 billion left in 2008 when the financial crisis hit. So really, right now, if you're in Russia, you know, it looks like the financial crisis of 2008 all over again. So we'll be paying attention to that. But again, they don't care about international rating standards anymore, because I do believe they are going to go to their own rating standard, which is going to have a lot more to do with assets and resources and a lot less to do with, hey, this piece of paper is worth money because I told you it was, wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of stuff. Anyway, that's what I think is going on. And another little bit about gold right now. There's a forecaster named Sharps Pixley who's sounding a very bullish right now on gold, but suggesting that the price of gold will probably be someplace around $1,321 an ounce on average in the year 2015. He also believes that it might be a high over $1,400 an ounce, which is actually pretty conservative for some of the people out there talking about gold these days and about the real value of gold. But again, we just had the gold price, and it is up right now quite significantly, and it has been that way since Switzerland decided to remove their peg from the euro. It also looks like the Danish central banks are preparing to potentially do the same thing. Why do I say that? Well, because they're on the TV saying that they're not planning on doing the same thing. So what does that mean? If they come out and they say, well, we're not going to do that, we're much stronger than them. Warning, red flags, warning, danger, Will Robinson. I would look for them to remove their peg here pretty quick. And they also slashed some of their interest rates from 0.2%. From 0.05% down to negative 0.2%. So they are trying to keep the value of their currency down as well. And that was, again, very similar to the first steps that Switzerland took just a few weeks ago. Anyway, that's what's going on in the economy right now. Probably a lot more than that, but I want to jump over into some tech news here real quick. Let's see what is important going on. Well, Los Angeles is planning on putting municipal Wi-Fi and cellular phone service into their subway systems. They're one of the last subway systems that does not have continuous cellular coverage while you're on a moving train. And I believe that this is probably a reaction to that incident that took place in Washington, D.C. Just over the weekend. Obviously, a lot of people injured from smoke inhalation, and the way that first responders were able to communicate, obviously, was through the cellular connections that are available in Washington DC's subway system. And so people in LA were like, well, hey, we don't have that here. And what if something bad happened here? We couldn't get communication. And obviously a lot of the Twitter kids, they want stuff there. So, that is what's going to be coming to Los Angeles. Let's see what else is going on. Oh, the big report about the NSA breaching North Korean networks. Oh, back in 2010, probably not a big deal though. You know, you wouldn't want to go into a network like that to put, you know, spyware and things like that. I don't know, maybe if you were in there since 2015, it'd be pretty easy to say, hey, look, these are the guys who hacked Sony, because there's all this stuff that indicates that, you know, looking at their system now. Well, how do you know that the NSA didn't put all that stuff there back in 2010? You don't. Anyway, big report in the New York Times. So definitely pay attention to that right now, because, again, a lot of disclosure happening around the world while things are going on. Let's see here. Pizza is the number one enemy in the fight against obesity. There's been a lot of conjecture about fast food, things like that, but pizza, don't eat it, ladies and gentlemen. That's awful for me to even have to say that, because it's my favorite food. But there has been a major study now saying that pizza, eaten a couple of times a week, will in fact make you fat. So let's talk a little bit about Chuck Norris again. I want to point out once again that Chuck Norris taking a pretty big stand against Monsanto. He wrote a piece for WorldNet Daily called Chuck Norris Raises the Red Flag Over Monsanto, and he speaks out pretty plainly about the destructive force of Monsanto, and specifically Chuck Norris highlights Monsanto's use of glyphosate, which is Roundup, and its effects. He goes on, he says, the only real way that you know whether or not you're eating glyphosate traces or its residue is in the food that you eat, is if you grow the food yourself. That's what he's saying. It's the only way you can know that your food is glyphosate free and doesn't have any residue on it is to grow the food yourself or only buy products that are certified organic. He also says that the EPA promised a completed preliminary risk assessment of glyphosate by the end of last year. So Monsanto began making and marketing glyphosate under Roundup name back in the 1970s, quickly became an industry standard. We've talked quite a bit about the connection between glyphosate and autism, glyphosate and all kinds of neurodegenerative diseases, and it's in everywhere, and the FDA does not test for it because it's on everything. They said it's not cost effective for them to have to test for it. So anyway, Chuck Norris stepping up against Monsanto. I think this is going to be a turn in the tide. There is a rumor out there, and I believe it's true, that one time in the great distant past, Chuck Norris was actually bitten by a poisonous cobra, and then after 5 excruciatingly painful days, the cobra finally died. True story, ladies and gentlemen. We got to go to a 3-minute break. Chris Kitsey will be joining us when we come back. We'll be talking about encrypted technology, encrypted, communications, things like that. The importance of encryption. That's what we're going to be talking about. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker. For free! Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. by clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
You're listening to the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. Moving into the second hour of our live broadcast today, which is always the guest segment. And we're very excited today to be joined by the one and only Chris Kitsey. We're going to be having a pretty extensive discussion about cybersecurity and encryption and things like that and the importance of those issues, especially right now given the wake of the Charlie Hebdo attack and the subsequent crackdown on encryption that we're going to be seeing coming down the pike. But for those of you guys who don't know, Chris is a CEO of Unseen.is, which is a encrypted and private and secure communications platform, and one that we use here at redpillreports.com and are very excited about, especially as it expands in its capability. So to say it shortly, Chris Kitsey has a very extensive background in computers and computer programming, high-tech type stuff like that. He's also, a lot of you guys might not know, he also is the founder and the publisher of the crowdsourced news site Before It's News, which is one of the best and, you know, leading alternative information aggregate news sites on the internet. Probably one of the ones that I go to on a daily basis, if not, you know, on a more than daily basis. So to say that the gentleman has his hands in current affairs and current events would be a bit of an understatement. So we're always very excited to have Chris Kitsey join us on the program. And today is no exception. Chris, thank you very much for joining us once again on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, of course. I think, again, you know, with everything that's going on in the world right now, the importance of private and secure communications is probably going to be at the forefront here going forward. And I do want to have a pretty extensive discussion about that. But before we do, I wonder if you would, just for the new listeners out there, again, we're a newer show and we still have a lot of listenership growing. If you could just kind of give us a little bit more of the details of your background, how you got into this position of being both at the forefront of alternative news and the forefront of encrypted, secure, private communications. I mean, those are two kind of different aspects, but you're kind of the forefront of both of those. How'd all that happen?
Well, it's a long road, but to make it a brief story so I won't run out of airtime here, I started in high tech about 25 years ago and have done a lot of startup companies, starting with CD-ROM, then I did the internet, a directory company, and then a company called Zoom.com that Zoom with an X back when it was a web community. And that's actually the first place where I found out where the security was really breached, because one of our tech team came back from a meeting with our ISP and he said, "Hey, did you know that there's a room in the back of the co-location facility, that's where you host all your servers and where they're connected to the internet, where the NSA is collecting every email and every website visit going through?" And I said, "What? Is that even legal?" That was in 1997.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with 9/11. It's not a flaw. It's designed into the system. And so the point is that this has been going on for a long time. That's when I first became aware of this. And then I've run into people along the way. Started before it's news in 2010, basically early 2010. Well, actually late 2009. And we started out with crowdsourced news. We said, hey, let's make YouTube for news, because the bloggers were beating everybody else with scoops by 3 or 4 days compared to the mainstream news. The mainstream news was going to the blog sites to get their leads,
right?
And because the bloggers were working harder, doing a better job, and being honest and truthful. That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is we started Before It's News, and you know, after a period of time of, we just finally decided to make the whole thing pretty much free range. What that means is that we don't check on the story to see if it's true. We're just a hosting service.
Okay.
Well, we are, just like YouTube. YouTube doesn't go and make sure that everything that someone's saying in a video is true or not. We just don't have the time either. So if someone complains, if there's something that's a copyright violation, we have terms of service, copyright violation, defamation, all the usual things that people sometimes do, sometimes inadvertently, sometimes intentionally. If we're notified by it, we take action and get rid of the stuff, and in some cases punish the member, kick them off the service if they're doing a lot of bad things. And so we basically try and keep it a clean and well-lit place, mm-hmm. but it's caveat emptor. Now that means it requires that you have to think. You can't just go and accept something as being true. And what I always tell people is, if you do that on Before It's News, you should do it on CNN, AP, NBC, CBS, all the usual places where people get news.
Yes.
Always ask yourself a question: who is telling me this? What is their motivation for telling me this? And
yes.
Is it true or is it not true?
Yep. I've got a saying that I like to say. I got to interrupt. I'm sorry. I have to say this real quick.
Yeah.
But everything you see on television or hear on the radio is either a product, a person, or a perspective, and they're all for sale. You just have to remember that. So anyway, didn't mean to interrupt you, but.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, and this is what's great about internet radio, is this is where there's real freedom, because on terrestrial radio, you have to go get a license.
Yep.
And you know what happens? If you don't say something that whatever regime is in power, if they don't like it, guess what? Next time your license comes up for review, well, too bad. You're not going to get it renewed.
Right.
And those licenses are worth millions of dollars. It costs a lot to put up a radio station. So it's a form of censorship dictated by the licensing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where freedom is. And I think this is where our conversation is going to go today, is if you were a group of people who wanted to control the distribution of this kind of information. And, you know, I think we're rapidly reaching that famous 10% that Stalin might or might not have talked about, which is he didn't care what 10% of the people knew or thought. But when you go over 10%, then he's going to start paying attention to it and stomp things down and whatever, because you start to reach a tipping point. 10% is about the tipping point.
Yes.
We're pretty much there right now. We're just about there. A lot of people, I'm getting calls from friends of mine. I run into people. And they're telling me about 9/11. They just discovered it.
Right. I have the same phone calls. I get them too.
It's just, isn't it amazing? But I'm so happy that these people are finally waking out of the slumber and they're realizing, all this stuff that I've been seeing. When you watch the mainstream news and media, you have to understand it's all propaganda.
Yep.
That's what it all is. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying all the people who work in mainstream media are bad people. There are a lot of good people who work there, but the system is being controlled, and in such a way that it's almost impossible for anyone who is really a truth teller to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get back to your question, which is how we ended up where we did, we built Before It's News. We started noticing that some of the stories were being blocked. And we just, like I said, it's free range. We let anybody say just about anything. And one of the stories that got blocked was, is Obama gay? We don't care one way or the other what President Obama does. That's up to him.
Right.
But this is a story that was just being stomped down. And what was happening is people would click on the link and they would get a white screen. And what that means is that it would just sit there and it would just spin around and you would have nothing, no ads, the content didn't get delivered. nothing. It was like our server didn't exist.
Wow.
And we started investigating that, and we actually had one person who worked for us who was at home on Verizon, and she couldn't get to the website. She took the exact same computer across the street to Starbucks and got right on via T-Mobile.
Oh, okay.
And we've had, yeah. So what's happened is, you know, there are certain ISPs who have been, you know, and it's not necessarily the company themselves. They could have people working there who just do this stuff because they want to, you know, for whatever political reason or who knows. But what happened is we started thinking to ourselves, well, how are people going to find out the truth and hear the news if they can't get to the website? So that's why we built Unseen. We said, well, in order to get to break through this, it's exactly like the situation in China. And a lot of the people who worked at our company are Falun Gong meditation practitioners. This meditation practice is an ancient practice. It came about in China in 1992. Cultivates truth, compassion, and tolerance. And in 1999, there were about 100 million people in China doing this meditation. The government, the communist government in China, didn't like the fact that there were more people doing the meditation who had just found out about it through word of mouth because people were having their illnesses cured. They were, you know, their mental state was much better. They were kind and compassionate to other people. It really transformed people. Mm-hmm. And so what they did is they started persecuting Falun Gong in 1999. That's now been going on for over 15 years. This will be the 16th anniversary this July. And so what we started looking at is that the people in China, they can't get outside of China to find out real news. All the news in China is censored. They have what they call a 50-cent army. These are people who get paid basically 50 cents a day. Maybe some of them get paid 50 cents an hour, but I doubt it. And these people are censors for the Internet. They have 2 million of these people in China. Well, what we started noticing was we're starting to see the same kind of thing happen here. You start noticing a lot of these trolls who come to the website, and it's like, wow, this person is unemployed, or this is his full-time paid job. And I think what's happening is that you're seeing a lot of people who are now going out spreading disinformation. They do it about us all the time. They say bad things about me. I don't really care what they say about me. They say things about our service, that it's broken, that it's a honeypot or this or that or whatever. But I can tell you this, it has been an uphill battle to get this stuff out there. And it's like, I won't say it's a fight, but it's a struggle every step of the way to get this stuff out there. And so what we did when we first started, we said, well, what do we want to have? We want to have chat, and we want to have a function like Skype and Gmail. Those are two very good services. They're, extremely useful. People in China want to use them. People everywhere in the world want to use it because everyone wants to communicate freely. Mm-hmm. So the conclusion we came to was, let's build very strong encryption, and let's hook it up to this kind of service and put the user in charge of their communications and their content. What happened is we started out with the standard military-grade encryption. This is the SSL, RSA, AES encryption.
Let me stop you right there for just a second. Like, can we talk about, just for people out there who may be completely out of the loop, what is encryption? What do we mean when we say encryption, and how does it actually work before we get into the different types of encryption?
Sure. The word crypt means hidden. It's a Greek word. It means hidden. And what that means, it's like you think of a crypt. Well, what is it? It's like something buried underground where they bury people, right?
Yeah.
But actually what it means is it means to hide. And so what you do with encryption is you take a mathematical formula and you apply it to your message, because your message is just a series of numbers. That's all it is. It's zeros and ones. And by applying this formula, you have a key which allows you to have an individual, I have a key, you have a key, and this allows only you and I to be able to encode and decode this message. It's like the spy decoder ring.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. If I tell you, okay, switch it over to setting 32, you set your decoder ring to 32, I'll encode the message with the key 32, and you'll decode it with 32. Anyone else who doesn't have the spy decoder ring set to 32 won't be able to see the message. That's the idea.
Okay, okay.
Now, it's more sophisticated than that, of course.
Well, I would hope so.
Well, if you've seen it's funny because, you know, they're basically, we've been told by you know, people who are in a position to know, who work for security agencies. There are basically four kinds of encryption. There's what we call the toy encryption. That's like the Caesar code, which is take the letter A, add a number to it. Let's say it's 2. The letter A transforms to the letter C. Mm-hmm. To decode it, all you do is subtract the 2. So you get back to A. That is actually something being used by Al-Qaeda.
Wow, really?
I saw a video the other day. It was like such a joke because I looked at that and I just said, oh my gosh, I can't believe people still are using this thing.
I mean, that really is a decoder ring method, right? I mean, essentially.
Exactly. it's pretty surprising when you see that kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
But people are still, they're still using it. They think it's some great discovery and, you know, to someone who doesn't know how this stuff works, I mean, it can work, right? It can be effective.
Right.
But what ended up happening is when you look at the next level of encryption, that's what we have, what most people commonly call military grade. We were told early on when we had, Defense News, probably 4 or 5 years ago by people who were former contractors and this and that. I can't say any names or who they are or whatever.
Okay.
If it's publicly available, it's broken. That's what we were told.
Right.
And we said, well, okay, let's just go use what's publicly available and we'll get the thing started. We used AES, RSA, and SSL. Well, about a month after we started doing it, one of our users who is in the military sent it to his friend at another military base, and the guy broke into the AES in about an hour. And we said, okay, well, this is probably not good enough because you have to remember, if the U.S. has something, it's been stolen by the Chinese, the Russians, the English. Basically, everyone's got it. And the problem now is that this stuff is falling into the hands of criminal gangs. That's the problem. This is why you're seeing all these break-ins. The criminal gangs are being actively supported by state security agencies in a lot of cases. So, you know, how do you secure your money, for example? Well, it's going to be really tough, and that's why we felt we needed to find some kind of stronger encryption. So the next level up of encryption, the third level, is what's used by banking systems, and this is much stronger encryption. It's allowed for export because its utility is limited. That's in the U.S. That's the laws in the U.S. A lot of other countries, Taiwan, Iceland, there are no laws about encryption whatsoever.
Hmm.
It's just considered personal property.
Right.
You know, your thoughts and your writing is your personal property. And if you want to protect it, you're able to protect it however you want to.
Hmm.
And that's actually how it is. That's how it should be in the free country.
Right.
But what ended up happening is that's the banking level encryption, and that's pretty much what we have today. Our encryption is based on two standards that were not adopted widely. They were originally created by some very good cryptographers, and then we had our own cryptographers go through and enhance it. So, you know, there are a lot of things that it turns out they've put weakeners in everything and backdoors in just about everything. There are three layers of backdoors that we know about. One is in the hardware. So chips, for example, like Wi-Fi chips made in China,
mm-hmm.
those all have backdoors that the Chinese have put into them. And if the Chinese have put those into it, everybody else knows about it.
Right.
So your Wi-Fi is completely insecure. The next level is that's the hardware. The next level is the operating system. Mac, Windows, they've all got backdoors built in. I mean, it's just basically just walk into it. Unix, there are things that they've, you know, we've heard that in 2003 they changed the kernel and they put something in. It's all open source, but, you know, this is the myth about open source. People come and say, well, I only use open source whatever because people can go look at it. But here's the problem. How many people in the whole world have the technical understanding to be able to know what actually is really going on, not just on a theoretical, mathematical basis, but on an operating, practical basis?
Yeah,
I'd say you need to have both.
0.003% maybe of people could actually read the code, you know.
I think it's probably between 5,000 and 10,000 people in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those people have been co-opted and work for security agencies. Some work for more than one security agency. They're double dipping on their paycheck.
Right.
But what ends up happening is the fourth level of encryption is what they call a weapon. And that's so strong that people just can't get through it. Now, you know, what can you use? Well, cryptographically, you could use something like a one-time pad. That's actually it's actually fairly old. It was invented by telegraph operators, and I could bore your users, your listeners to death here, but basically what you do is you just use a book. We agree on some kind of a book and say, okay, let's go to the Bible, this verse and this chapter and this verse, and that's going to be the key. And you're always changing it, and you have a pre-agreed upon set, and as long as someone else doesn't know what the key is, you're probably going to be really secure. Now, using a publicly available book like that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
And, but, you know, like a phone book from 10 years ago or something like that. I mean, where you can go and find things like that. But even that stuff, you know, the encryption itself just protects the message between your computer and the other person's computer who's trying to receive your message. The issue now is that what's happening, and you've seen all of the malware attacks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the malware, what it does is it's basically installing keyloggers and backdoors into your computer so that people can just come on and basically listen to and take whatever they want to from your computer.
Right.
Now, we don't protect against this yet, but we're working on some things right now that we think could help. And one of those is a personal firewall that will block things. This is what banks do. They have a firewall that keeps people out, but it's not 100%. Nothing ever is.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they then assume, okay, let's say that someone does get through this firewall and all the security measures we have, how do we protect the stuff that's in the banking system? And what they do is they put a firewall going out. So what that does is that someone who makes a request to get one credit card number or one piece of information, that can go through. Someone wants to steal 75 million credit cards, that's going to get blocked.
Okay.
That's the concept in a nutshell. And I mean, these systems are a lot more sophisticated than this, but that is the long and short of what is, how the encryption world works. Why it's important, because if you can't read your message, they're either going to have to make a choice to block your message, block everything like it on the internet. And that we'll talk about anti-blocking in a little bit, but those are the things that's part of the reason why they don't want the encryption is because they actually want to censor the entire internet now. And if they see this packet going across the internet that says, is Obama gay, they can block it. And what'll happen is it'll just drop and you won't even know that you missed the message.
It just disappears.
It's like email.
Right.
Disappears. You get emails from your friends and your friends say, you know, I sent you this email last week. Did you get it? No. You go in the spam filter. It's not there. You go everywhere in your email. It's not there. It disappeared. And so that's what's starting to happen now is that web pages and emails and other messages are being disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard a lot of reports from our users about this. We've seen it firsthand. I mean, I've actually seen on a computer that we have, I've seen an email literally disappear from in front of my eyes.
Really?
And this was an email about chemtrails. I'd always heard about this, and I never had seen that happen before, but I've seen it happen.
So, like, you were in your email service thing, looking at your email, turned away, came back, and that email was gone in the ether?
No, I was sitting there reading the email, and it just disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, but part of this, you have to understand part of this is the psyops, right? So we have, like, even my wife now, like the phone calls, it's very difficult. My phone, half the time, it doesn't even show that someone called me.
Right.
So phone calls are being blocked. So the issue with this, if you've been on a hot list, I'm on probably every hot list, and I mean, it's not like I'm doing anything illegal. We check with lawyers, check on the legality of everything.
Right.
We're helping good people. We're not trying to help bad people. And we're helping good people find out the truth about things like the persecution of Falun Gong in China. We're helping people find out about what's really going on, just like your listeners are interested in finding out about these kind of things. And people have a right to know. If it's true, I mean, how can you have a representative, republic where people are supposed to take responsibility for their actions and be informed voters? How can you be an informed voter if you don't know what's really going on?
Yeah, well, you can't. And that's the game, you know. That's the whole thing, you know. They don't have any interest in you being an informed voter. They don't have any interest in you thinking outside of your factory job and your little, you know, the box that you live in. They'd rather you were just sitting on your couch and watching TV. which is why, you know, they're showing us so much of this fear-inducing stuff on television all the time. You know, and that's, I think that's the thing that really bugs me about this, is that when I talk to you and you talk to me about things that were happening in terms of information aggregation before 9/11, you know, long before 9/11, where they were scooping up information. We know they're flying around in Cessnas now with cell phone snoopers. The DEA just released a big report, or somebody released a report about the DEA, I think just this week, citing a 15-year, you know, agency-wide you know, information gathering exercise with international phone calls and things like that, people completely not related to the drug trade and stuff like that. So it's been going on for such a long time, and that makes me think, okay, so that part of the stage has been set. They want us to feel like we need encryption, and we obviously do. You know, obviously, we obviously need alternative media. We need to get away from top-down information, you know, and censorship, and get into this whole decentralized information, which is the beauty of the internet, obviously, the ability to disseminate information without it being controlled from the top. And that struggle, you can see, is what they're really fighting with. You know, David Cameron coming on TV saying that we can't let these people have a place to hide. What do you say to those people right now? You know, what do you say to the people who say, well, we cannot, you know, it is worth more to be able to track these quote unquote terrorists than it is for you to be secure in your, you know, private communications? Because that's obviously the battle that's going to be fought. What do you say to those people, Chris?
Well, people have a right to free speech, and that means to not be censored. It also means that people have a right to know what the truth is. And that's a human right. And what's happening is that it doesn't matter what country of the world you're in, that is a fundamental human right. And, you know, you think about what it is about people. How can people make a choice about their future if they don't know what's true? Mm-hmm. They can't. And so what I say to someone like that is, what you're actually doing is something that is extremely wicked and evil, because you are preventing people from finding out the truth. Now, why are they doing that? Well, because they don't want people to know about the truth. If everyone knew the truth, I think it was George Bush the senior who said, if people knew what was really going on, they'd spring us up from the lamppost.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not advocating any kind of violence. I don't think that's correct either. But I think that just exposing evil is something that people really should do. If you see something, say something. Just exactly like what they say. And the point is that when people like David Cameron and other elected officials take this tax, which is where they are treating the citizens of their countries worse than subjects. Because even in ancient times, when there were kings treated their subjects with respect. King's task was to take care of their subjects.
Yes.
They're not even doing that anymore.
We've got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. Chris Kitsey, more of this interesting conversation about encryption and the threats from the administration right now. So keep it right here. Quick 3-minute break, guys. We'll be right back. Right.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
X-Squared Radio in Brooks, Acton.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break, and it's very nice to see all of you active in the chat room. If you guys have questions for Chris Kitsey or myself, please hit us up in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com, or I'll go ahead and open up the phone lines as well if you guys have a question or a comment, 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884. If you're not able to spell with your phone, some people may be too young for that for that type of reverence. Anyway, so we're right in the middle of a discussion with Chris Kitsey. He's, of course, the CEO of Unseen.is. And Chris, before we get back into our discussion, I wanted to thank you for the introduction to one of your teammates, Water Lily. What an amazing human being she is. And I hope that that is exemplary of all the other people that you have working with you there, because we were really fortunate to be able to have her on as a guest and bring her to our listeners as well. And I just wanted to thank you for hiring her and having her work with you, because what a great choice that you made there, and for making the introduction and having her available for us here at Red Pill Reports.
Well, we have a lot of exceptional people, and most of the people are, you know, they just quietly work. I mean, personally, if it was me, I would prefer just to stay in the background and you know, not go out on radio interviews and whatnot. But it's so important to get the information out there to people that, you know, that's what we do. And I mean, it's, you know, this is the thing I told her before she went on the air. I said, do you really want to do it? And she said, yeah, I want to, because I want to talk to people and let them know what we're really doing here. And I said, yeah, that's a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we're very fortunate to have people like Water Lily around our sites. We have a very talented team of people. A lot of them are not in the U.S. A lot of them are, some are in the U.S., some are in Europe, some are in Asia. Most of our engineers are in Asia. And in order to protect them, you know, people have said, well, who was you on your engineering team? And I said, I can't tell you.
Right.
And that's for their safety. So, you know, this is why we do things a little bit differently. We don't release our source code. People say, well, you didn't release your source code. I said, well, it didn't do any good for RSA, so why don't you trust us? If you don't trust us, you shouldn't be here. It's that simple. Now, if you find something that's wrong, tell us about it, and we will fix it immediately. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's our promise to you, is that we are going to do our best to provide the best level of security and protection for you and your information. We have people who use our service where their life depends on it. And we have people who, you've heard their name before, I can't tell you who they are, because we have privacy. So it's not like we're going to go and say, so-and-so says this great thing about the service. We will never be able to advertise like that. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little background on it. But yeah, Water Lily's fantastic. She's great. And we enjoy having her company at our site.
Well, and I just have to say, I do appreciate, despite the fact that you don't enjoy, you know, going on to radio shows, I do appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to come on and talk to us about this stuff. Because again, I think this is going to be a hot button issue for a long time going forward. I don't think the administration is going to take any kind of step back away from, you know, demanding essentially that they're able to read absolutely everything that's going on the internet. And, you know, to give people an option and to let people understand where that option sprang from, the fact that you guys do take very seriously the lives of the people who are working for you, and the fact that they are, you know, in a situation where their life is dependent upon your ability to provide the service that you're providing. I think that that position, that from that framework, is just so important for people to understand. So I really do commend you for coming on the air and talking about it. I want to talk more about unseen.is because, you know, I've been using it quite a bit lately, and I know that there are some big changes coming forward. I do want to point out to the listeners that, you know, it is unseen.is, and that the servers and all of the infrastructure there is in Iceland. And, I don't want to get into it too heavily right now, but I just will say that in previous interviews that I've, you know, I've spoken with Chris in the past, I do believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that all of the infrastructure there in Iceland is heavily fortified against both Viking attack and dragon attack. So I think that those guys did the right thing by going there. But do you want to talk a little bit, Chris, about why you chose Iceland as a place of operation for this whole project?
Sure. Well, we looked at, you know, this is a portable business. That means we could put it anywhere in the world, because it's basically a bunch of servers and some software. The software, the company is more or less a virtual company, and so we could put it anywhere. So when Edward Snowden's revelations came out, we originally started in the U.S. because the infrastructure for the internet actually is the best in the world here.
Hmm.
We have the best connectivity. Well, that's by design. You have to keep in mind, if you send something from, say, Southern Europe to Northern Europe, there's a very good chance that the packets may very well go through the U.S. It's faster and it's cheaper for the ISPs to do that.
Okay.
Now, think about what other reason why they would send stuff through the U.S. Because they can gather it.
Right.
It's more efficient to gather it and ship it off to Bluffdale, which is where the big data center is, one of them, at least the one we know about. And what ends up happening is, the best we can do for people for security is to provide them with top quality encryption, the best we can do, get their messages and have them delivered ideally from peer to peer. That's the best. But if someone's not there and it turns out that peer to peer is not as reliable as everybody likes to think it is, for phone calls, things like that, it's fine. But let's say I want to send a message to you and you're not there. Well, where do we store it?
Ah, okay.
You need a safe place to store it. So we looked around and we said, okay, the Scandinavian countries in the world, you know, it's probably between Switzerland and the Scandinavian countries for the best privacy laws and protection of personal property and personal rights. Scandinavian countries are very good. We looked at Norway. We said, well, NATO country, probably not. Iceland is an independent country. And we started looking back, and one of the things we discovered about Iceland that was very interesting and what actually pushed us over the edge was the way the people of Iceland stood up for the rights of other people who are not even from Iceland. In 2001, Jiang Zemin, who was the premier of China, who started the persecution of Falun Gong in China, mm-hmm. in 1999, visited Iceland. It was on a, you know, let's go do some trade with Iceland. We want to buy their fish and sell them cheap trinkets. And what ended up happening is, about 200 Falun Gong practitioners said, we have to go and let the people of Iceland know about what's really happening in China. So they went to peacefully protest this visit, which is a human right, and that is a right that people in Iceland enjoy, the right to freely, protest things.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is about 100 of the 200 people did not get on their planes because the government of China had given Iceland a list of practitioners who were people who were practicing Falun Gong,
right,
and blocked them at the airport. They didn't even get on the plane.
Wow.
The other 100 people, about 50 of them were detained in Iceland, and the other 50 never got detained. The people of Iceland, when they found out that the government had done this, were furious.
Mm-hmm.
3,000 of them marched on the parliament. This is in a country of 300,000 people, so it's 1% of the population, came out and marched They had duct tape across their mouths. They were carrying signs, quietly marching in protest. And when people saw this, they said, oh, we made a wrong decision. The government apologized, and all the practitioners were released from detention.
Wow.
So that tells you when someone is willing to stand up for someone else's rights because they're doing what is right, that is a very, very good thing. That's what we were looking for. We don't have that in the U.S. You look at the stuff that goes on here, no one says a peep.
Yep.
People are too busy with their pizza and Super Bowl to care.
Yes.
And this is what's happening here. So that's why we chose Iceland. Now, Iceland has a downside, which is that after 2008 and the banking problem that happened there, a number of the banks failed and a lot of foreign depositors lost their money. They tried to, the banks, the big banks, and you know who runs those.
Yes.
The big banks were trying to force the people of Iceland, who had nothing to do with these private businesses, force everyone in Iceland to be taxed to pay for the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of Iceland said, the politicians originally said, okay. The people of Iceland said, no way. They
yep.
got out and they had what they call the pots and pan revolution. They got their pots and pans out, went out in front of Alþingi, which is the parliament building in Reykjavik, banged on the pots and pans until the politicians said, you know, you're right. It's not fair for people who are not involved with these banks
mm-hmm.
to pay for their losses. The bank should pay for the loss. And the depositors, because they were greedy, they wanted a higher interest rate, they should take the lump too. And that's what happened. Now, what happened is after that, the banks basically put Iceland in the penalty box, and they forced them to pass, I'm assuming, I don't know all the circumstances, but it looks to me like at financial gunpoint, they were forced to pass a foreign exchange act, and they were basically told, we'll destroy your currency and take your currency down to 10% of its current value, and then you guys will be impoverished forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what ended up happening is the parliament passed the Foreign Exchange Act, which is one of the most draconian foreign exchanges in the world. And for that reason, we're probably going to have to set up a marketing operation somewhere else, maybe Switzerland. We're looking at that right now because it's very difficult to get money out of Iceland to pay people like our contractors in Asia and other parts of the world. So that is the situation. That's why we chose Iceland. Iceland is a very, very good place for your data. The Icelanders are very good people. They're honorable. When you go to Iceland, if you drop your wallet on the street, the chances are very good. Someone will pick it up and chase after you, and you'll get every penny back.
Right.
Because their first thought is, wow, someone lost their wallet. Let me help this person get their wallet back. Other parts of the world, it's, wow, what's in this wallet? Let me see what I can help myself to.
Yeah.
The thinking is completely different. And that's actually how it used to be. Human beings are supposed to be compassionate and kind to each other, not trying to get whatever they can get for themselves and be selfish.
Yeah.
Selfishness is not a normal human thing.
I agree. I think this whole concept of scarcity and competition and profit, all of those are made up constructs of the minds of men. And we go out and we focus on those things, and we actually cause real harm, death, and destruction to the planet and its inhabitants in the quest for fake money and in pursuit of the lie of scarcity and competition, which are things I don't believe in anymore. But I completely agree with you that, I had an interesting conversation, maybe a little off topic, but with a friend the other day who's a devout Christian, and he was talking about the state of the world and just how awful everything is. And I tried to explain to him that the nature of human beings is not what we're seeing on television, and a lot of the things that we're seeing in the news are constructs, they're creations, or they're an attempt to drive, traffic to a website or to pay attention to a product or whatever it is that they're marketing to us. And he said, well, all human beings are greedy. We're greedy people. And I looked at him and I said, have you ever been greedy with your son? And he looked at me and he said, well, no. And I said, well, there you go. I was like, that's the whole key, is that everybody needs to realize that we're all related, that we're all in this mess together, and that by taking care of one another, we can actually improve our own circumstances. And having an attitude of gratitude is super important, and understanding when you're in a position to offer help to somebody is vitally, vitally important. And I think that you guys, having so much integrity there, being based in Iceland, but also with the group of people that you're working with, and understanding the danger that people are in around the world, A, from not being able to get good information, or from being able to communicate effectively,
we're in a pickle right now. And so, you know, I don't know. I really recommend people do go to unseen.is. How do people get involved with it, Chris? What's the process for getting involved with Unseen?
Well, what you need to do is just go to unseen.is and get a free account. Now, it's probably not going to be free accounts forever.
Okay.
And the reason is we're looking at this right now, and we're taking a hard look at how we operate the site, because it costs a lot of money to run real security. It's not a simple thing to run. We have to have a lot of very, very talented and very experienced people to run this. It's not something that some, you know, high school kid can dream up and just get running in a weekend.
Okay.
And what happens is that what we're doing is just go there now. Your listeners should go and get a free account. What's going to happen is we'll grandfather, and if someone is here free, we're in beta mode right now. We're still testing things out. What is going to happen is when we switch off of beta, it's going to go to a premium only service. People who get an account now will get it for at least a year for free service. If they want to help us, if they can go and help find other people to use the service, you know, they can earn free accounts. That's how it's going to work. If people are in desperate situations, let's say they're being persecuted, like Christians, Falun Gong, someone like that, if you're a news reporter, and that by that we have very loose definition. If you report news on a blog or you help provide news as a news source, it's free. So there are going to be a lot of free accounts, but people are going to have to qualify for it, because I think people need to treasure what we're doing for them a little bit more. And I know a lot of people do treasure it. The people who paid us, of course, treasure it. And a lot of people who are free users also treasure it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's going to happen. We're looking at this more like a community type of a model. And frankly, there are people who have more money and they can pay more, and they want to pay more. And there are people who don't have as much money and they can't afford to pay for it. And so we need to try and find a way to allow people to from everywhere to you know, get the use of this valuable service.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a, you know, in a nutshell, what we're doing with the service. That's how people can get involved. As far as software development and things like that, we will probably have some open source things coming out soon that the open source community can get involved with. For example, we're building a router. I'm sitting here holding it in my hand right here.
Nice.
We're going to send an email out today. And this is actually an edge server. And what it does is it basically, you put this out in front of your router, and what it's going to do is it's going to provide anti-blocking. We haven't gotten into that yet, but that is the next generation. And people will be able to help support this network. Those people, of course, will earn free accounts. And what that means is that, just like with Skype, most people don't realize when you use Skype, Skype is using your bandwidth to route other people's calls. They're using your bandwidth, they're using your CPU. You don't even know about it unless you read the terms of service.
Yeah, extrapolate on that for just a second. What are you saying now?
Well, what happens with Skype is that when you turn it on, let's say you have a fast connection, you have a cable modem and you've got 25 megabits down and 10 megabits up. That's a very valuable connection for something like Skype, because what it does is it routes their calls through your computer. So what happens is, if you look at your CPU and you look at the bandwidth that's being used, all of a sudden, this is why when you're not using Skype, if Skype is turned on, it is running in the background, and it's using your resources. Now, we'll need to do something similar, but the difference is we'll tell people what we're doing, and we'll give people control of whether they want to do that or not. And the key is, because this will need to happen for anti-blocking. When we talked about how things are being censored and blocked, the first step is to encrypt it and put it into a package that can't be read, because that's one of the things that is easy to block. If you can look inside, you can say, oh, there's the word Falun Gong. This is what the Chinese do. There's the word Falun Gong. We're going to block that packet from going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing just gets blocked. That happens in China. It's starting to happen here, not with Falun Gong, but with a lot of other things. And so one of the things that I think people have to be mindful of is, we're going to have to form a network of trusted people. It's what I call a self-organizing trusted network. How do you create trust? Well, you and I know each other. We've been on the radio show together. You know, we've talked a lot. I would trust you. How many other people can I trust? Well, some people, if someone knows I know who trusts this person, I'll trust that person too.
Right.
There are varying levels of trust. But I think that is what it's really going to come down to, is who do you trust to help protect the network? And, you know, there will be people who are rogue nodes who get in, who are, sneak in somehow, and we'll identify those and, you know, kick them off the network. But the point is that we'll need this kind of a trusted network in the future. And it's not just for the Internet. I think it's going to be for everything. If you look at how things work in places like East Germany and the Soviet Union during the heyday of communism, people would survive because of their network of people that they could trust.
Right.
They traded things between themselves because when they went to the store, there was no food. They had army boots for sale one week, and you just bought it because that's the only thing your money could buy. And hopefully you could trade army boots for a radish or something later on.
Right.
But the point is that, you know, and you wanted a car, you had to wait in line for 5 or 10 years, unless you're a party member, in which case you go to the front of the line to buy a really badly made car. But the problem is you're going to have to find a network of trusted people. That's what it's going to come down to. So my recommendation for everybody, join Unseen, get your friends on Unseen, and start using it to communicate with your friends. We will have, when these routers come out, one of the things we're going to be doing is distributing the entire network. That means you'll have your own private network. That's the key. Once everyone has the ability to do their own private network, then you can use Unseen as a central place to store and share things and publish things, but you might not always be able to get through. We had reports just the last 2 days that Unseen was being blocked in Uganda and in Turkey. So we're still looking into those reports right now, but I think it's safe to say that things are going to get dialed up here.
Yes.
And you heard, I don't know if you follow Martin Armstrong, he was the one who made the prediction. He said he's an economist who was in prison for 7 years because he wouldn't release his source code that predicts business and economic and civilization cycles
right
to the government. So they put him in jail for 7 years. And what ended up happening, he got out and he kept his software, but 7 years is one of the longest cases where someone has been in prison for not cooperating with a court order.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening is, a contempt of court, what ended up happening is he sent out a message, and it was on Drudge, and it was fairly widely covered. He said, they're going to try to take away encryption. And it's possible. I mean, I don't think they should do it because I think it tramples on these basic human rights. But maybe they're ready to reach the stage. Maybe we're going to enter the next stage of this whole thing.
Right.
In which case, it becomes more difficult. And at that point, you're going to have to be someplace like Iceland where they value freedom. You're going to have to start to become independently reliant and to form a network of your friends. So I think the most important thing is to create that self-organizing trusted network. That's really the key.
Mm-hmm. So is part of the private virtual network motif that you guys are working on right now, does that have to do with the anti-blocking capability as well?
It's all tied together, because if you form a private network, really what you're doing, it's like a VPN. That's a virtual private network.
Okay.
And what it does is it uses encryption to form a tunnel between my computer and a server, or my computer and your computer. What ends up happening is VPNs, they used to be very, very difficult to set up, very technical. And I remember the first time I set one of these things up, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, it took an engineer on the phone with me for 2 hours to get this thing up and running.
Wow.
And today, you can get these things running with a couple of clicks. Mm-hmm. And they actually are effective. I had woke up one morning maybe a month or two ago, and I couldn't get the before news. I went, I said, what's going on? I got the white screen connecting. I thought, okay, before news is being blocked. So then I started going to other websites. All of the news websites were being blocked. And I think what had happened is they were putting in software in the routers at the ISPs, and they're getting ready to lock this thing down. So the one thing that did work was the VPN. I turned on my VPN, got right through to everything.
Huh.
So the VPN seems to work, and that's kind of like a very low level of anti-blocking. The other way to handle anti-blocking, the way it works, is actually very simple. If I can't get to your computer, but I can get to somebody else's computer, and you can get to that other person's computer, then what we do is we route all of our messages through the other person's computer.
Okay.
It's that simple. And there's a little bit more complexity to it, but that's, in a nutshell, that's how it works. And so what we're going to do is allow individuals to become nodes on the network, to allow them to route messages, to allow them, and it's similar to Tor. People ask me, well, what's the difference between this and Tor? Well, it's a little bit different because our network concept has trusted and untrusted nodes. In Tor, they consider everything trusted, and right. I don't know that I could trust Tor because 60% of the money, at least a few years ago, came from the U.S. government.
Thank you for saying that.
But that's a choice that people have to make. Mm-hmm. They have to decide what they want to do. Some people really like Tor. I say, great, use Tor. But we'll have our own thing, and we'll be focusing on the anti-blocking, getting things to go to China so people in China can hear the truth. Mm-hmm. And to allow people to, we're not going to punch a hole in a firewall. We're going to let people hop over the wall. That's all it is.
Wow.
And, this is, again, for good people trying to do good things. That's the focus here.
Wow.
And I think the key is the anti-blocking. You're going to see this thing crank up. And depending on what happens when President Obama has the security summit that they've already been talking about,
mm-hmm.
you can see it coming.
Yeah.
They're going to say, well, we think that everybody should have this, that no one should have the right to use this, and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Chris, I want to change direction. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I did have a question from the chat room that I wanted to address about encryption. There are a lot of Android and iPhone apps that, purport to be encrypted type apps, and I don't know if you have any specific information about, any of them specifically. Somebody was asking about the secret space encryption or the secret space encryptor on Android. But what are your thoughts, generally speaking, about encrypted apps, apps that are supposed to do that for you, for your phones? Any reason to use something like that?
Well, I mean, it's better. It's probably better than nothing. And it's just a question of what it's protecting against.
Okay.
And if you're trying to, the first thing I'm going to say is this. If you really think, do you really think that a 99-cent or free application is going to keep someone who has a $2 billion data center out of your phone? It's not going to happen.
That's a good way to break that down. Okay.
It's not going to happen. So now if you want to keep the local high school hacker out of your phone, yes, it'll do that. If you want to keep the common garden variety person from stealing stuff out of your phone, yeah, that's probably going to help. It's really a degree of who you're going to help and what you're going to, what level of protection is going to solve what threat. That's really what it comes down to.
I got you.
So a lot of these things, some of these things are pretty good. Some of them, I haven't looked at them, but, some of them, I'm not going to say any names of any companies. Some companies I know have had investment from people who were formerly with the CIA's venture capital fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to look at who is behind these different things, and not everything is proof. So be careful.
Roger that. Being careful, that's the key to the day here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chris Kitsey, for joining us on the program. I'll let you get back to your life now, but thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks.
All right, everybody, that was the broadcast for today. Tomorrow we'll be back with Ralph Winterroad to be talking about sovereignty and the real way that the court systems work. Appreciate you guys all being here. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow. Take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.